Do you know him, Peyton?
She opened her eyes.
Peyton.
Right, the manager at the American Grill. Did he come to you? Did he ask you to help frame Merrill?
He shook her violently.
Did he?
She closed her eyes again and went limp in his arms. He could hear footsteps pounding down the hall. The door burst open and three EMTs were there. Decker called out,
Amos Decker with the FBI. She took pills from that bottle, more than five. I'm starting to lose her. I think she's unconscious.
One of the EMTs grabbed the bottle and looked at the label.
Okay, step back.
Decker moved away from the bed as the EMTs crowded around Mitzi, who had started to shake violently and then suddenly slumped over. One of the EMTs sprayed Narcan into her nostril. She didn't move for a long moment, and then she sat straight up and let out a lung full of air.
Okay, ma'am, just relax. We're going to take you to the hospital to get checked out.
What?
Then she went limp again and fell over sideways.
Shit, said the EMT.
He sprayed another shot of Narcan up her other nostril. She stirred but did not come fully back. They started a saline drip line and put a blood pressure cuff and pulse monitor on her.
Her pressure and respiration are really low, said one of the EMTs.
Critically low. I think she took something more than was in that bottle. Let's roll, now. They were loading her onto a gurney when Decker noticed something.
Wait a minute, where's her husband?
Who?
Said one of the EMTs.
Her husband, tall guy, he let you in.
Nobody let us in. The front door was open. We just followed the noise to back here.
Decker ran out of the room, down the hall, and out the front door. A late model Audi 8 had been parked in front when he'd gotten here. It was no longer there. He looked up and down the road fronting the house. Brad Gardner was gone, and Decker had no clue why.
Am I ever going to get out ahead of this damn case? Chapter 69. I don't like getting played, grumbled Decker.
He was sitting alongside Lancaster and Mars in the visitor's waiting room at the local hospital in Trammell, where Mitzi Gardner had been admitted into the critical care unit. As with Rachel Katz, they had armed guards stationed 24/7 outside her room. Though the doctors were hopeful that she would recover, they could not guarantee what her mental state might be when she regained consciousness. One of the doctors had told them, when abused, the drugs she took can have a particularly destructive impact on certain areas of the brain, having to do with memory.
Well, that's great, Decker replied, since we need for her to remember a lot of stuff.
Lancaster now said,
We found Brad Gardner's car abandoned about 2 miles from his house. He might have been picked up there and taken somewhere else.
It never occurred to me that her husband might be a part of all this, said Decker miserably.
Playing a role all these years, said Mars. That's a commitment, and then some.
Agreed,
said Lancaster.
I mean, they had a kid together.
I'm not saying the guy doesn't love her or didn't want to marry her and have a child, said Decker. But I can't think of another reason why he would have vanished like that, unless he was afraid we were going to find out something.
This goes way beyond money laundering, Decker,
said Lancaster.
We need to find out all we can about Brad Gardner.
Lancaster said,
I've already started digging. He went to college in Illinois, moved here about 15 years ago, worked at a variety of jobs in the financial sector. Now he specializes in an upscale placement market.
Mitzi told me a little about that. She called it a high-end job placement platform.
That's right,
said Lancaster.
Apparently, he's not placing people in low-paying jobs. He focuses on finance, law, high-tech, manufacturing, energy, those sorts of fields. They pay the big bucks, and he gets big commissions.
I wonder how he hooked up with Mitzi, said Decker.
You really think this was all arranged after the murders 13 years ago?
She didn't marry him 13 years ago. She had to go through her big makeover. She told me the Katz helped her with that. Then Gardner steps in and marries Mitzi, and they have a kid and a wonderful life.
And Gardner came to the area about the same time as David Katz was opening the American Grill,
noted Lancaster.
Right. Mitzi said her husband knew nothing about her past. Now either she was lying or she didn't know that her marriage might have been a setup.
Assuming it was, why would they go to all those lengths to give Mitzi a second shot at life?
Wondered Lancaster.
She helped them by framing her father for 4 murders. They wanted to keep her in line.
Lancaster shook her head and said,
Okay. But if they were afraid she might talk, why not just kill her? These folks don't seem to mind solving their problems with violence, and it's not like she was a major player in whatever they're doing.
Maybe they were afraid with another murder so soon after the others that people would get suspicious and start digging. With Merrill fingered as the killer, no one looked anywhere else. I know that better than anyone.
Mars said, and it worked, apparently, all this time.
Decker looked thoughtful. But now, with Gardner and Katz in the fold, we may be able to find out what's going on.
Well, Katz hasn't woken up yet, despite what the doctors told us, and Gardner isn't out of danger yet,
said Lancaster.
And you heard the doctor about the state of her memory. If she does come out of it, I'm not sure we can rely on either one.
I agree, replied Decker. Ground zero for us is the American Grill. We have to find out what's inside there.
Okay, but we have no probable cause whatever to search the place for an underground room,
pointed out his old partner.
We can ask nicely, said Mars.
Decker shook his head.
And this Bill Payton will be within his rights to say that the only person who can properly grant that request is lying in a hospital bed, unconscious. And if we tip him off, and he is in on whatever's going on, that would not be good. The guy struck me as really cagey.
So what do we do then? Asked Mars.
Decker looked at Lancaster. Did you run Payton's print?
We did, and got nothing back. He's not in the system.
Just because he has no criminal history doesn't mean much. Can we do a deeper dive on him? Try to find out his background? What he was up to prior to coming here?
We can. I just don't know how far we'll get. If he's not in the system, it might be hard to build a profile on the guy. I presume that there are a lot of Bill Paytons in this country.
Yeah, I did a preliminary search online and found squat. But we have to find a way to search for that secret room, said Decker.
I agree. I just don't know how we can.
If Katz wakes up, we can get her consent.
Right, but that might be never,
retorted Lancaster.
Then we have to try something else, said Decker.
I get that, but what?
Up to this point, we've been entirely reactive. They've been leading us around by the nose, and I'm getting sick of it.
Okay, so?
So, let's jerk their chain for once.
Chapter 70. The call came in at 1 a.m. Smoke coming from the American Grill. A fire, apparently. 2 fire companies responded, along with the police. Decker, Mars, and Lancaster followed on the heels of the arson squad as they approached the smoke-engulfed restaurant. The firefighters reported that it was only smoke and no fire. That made sense, because the smoke bombs that had been placed earlier on the roof of the grill and in the dumpster in the rear could produce no flames. Decker looked at the arson boss, Chuck Walters.
That's very suspicious, Chuck. I think we need to look inside for a point of origin. This might be some sort of feint, with the real fire to come once we leave.
The notion was fairly nonsensical, but Chuck nodded and said,
I think that's a good idea. Never know what might be on the inside.
Never know, agreed Decker. But hopefully, we're about to find out.
They forced open the front door of the restaurant, which immediately set off the alarm. One of the firefighters hastened to turn it off using a special code he inputted into the alarm panel.
A call will go out to whoever's on the notification list, said Lancaster.
What I'm hoping for, replied Decker.
The firefighters went in first and gave the all clear about 20 minutes later.
Okay, said Decker, turning on the lights. We need to search this place for possible arson materials. No stone unturned. Let's hit it.
The officers fanned out. Decker immediately went into the kitchen area, followed by Lancaster and Mars. The kitchen was spacious, scrupulously clean and organized, and virtually everything in the place looked made of stainless steel. They spent an hour going over every inch of it. Afterward, Decker leaned against one of the counters and looked around, his thick arms folded over his chest.
"They're not making this easy,"
said Lancaster.
"Lots of people come in and out of this kitchen, including people who have no connection to any of this, so it can't be apparent. But even so, it has to be somewhat accessible."
Lancaster looked around.
"I don't see anything that fits the bill unless we're talking a trap door in the floor."
Mars looked down.
"It's tiled, with no breaks. A trap door would be pretty obvious."
Decker pushed off the counter and went back into the large freezer room. It was about 10 feet deep and 8 feet across. He shivered slightly as he moved around the space, examining all the shelves and food stacked on them. He came back out and looked at the outside of the freezer compartment.
"Anybody got a tape measure?" he asked.
Neither Lancaster nor Mars did, but one of the cops had a rolling distance tracker in his trunk. He used it to measure distances during traffic accident reconstructions. Decker took the roller and paced off the depth of the freezer, going in between the shelving at the rear to tap his wheel against the back wall. Then he measured the width. He checked the measurement and then went outside the freezer and measured the distance from the front of the freezer to the back wall of the kitchen, and then from the side of the freezer to the far wall. He checked the measurement.
"I'm 2 feet short. This wall is 2 feet longer on the outside than the depth of the freezer on the inside, and the width is off by over 18 inches.
"How could that be?"
asked Lancaster.
"Maybe a load-bearing wall at the back or the side?"
"Why would it just be in the freezer and not out here?" said Mars. Decker hustled into the freezer, followed by Mars and Lancaster. He went straight to the back.
"Melvin, help me with these shelves."
Together, the two big men moved the heavy shelves out of the way with the food still stacked on them. When they were done, they were staring at a seemingly blank wall. Decker hit every angle and corner of the wall with his light. He got down on his hands and knees and felt along the bottom where the wall met the floor. Lancaster was shivering.
"Can we hurry this up before I get hypothermia?"
Decker stood and faced the wall.
"I don't see a button or anything like that. That would be too risky anyway. Someone comes in here, sees it, and pushes it to see what happens. Your secret is out."
"Like the floor, I don't see any break in the wall, Decker," observed Mars. "If there's a door hidden in here, I just don't see it." Decker looked back at the shelves they had moved.
"With those shelves in front and food stacked on them, no one would be able to even get close to the wall."
"And what exactly does that mean?" Decker put his palms against the wall.
"It means that maybe the wall is the door."
He set his feet and pushed. The entire wall easily rolled back. Revealed off to the left was a door. He opened the door. There was a set of narrow steps going down.
"Open sesame," quipped Mars.
They went single file down the stairs and came out into a darkened space. Decker shone his flashlight around, as did the others. The space held desks, maps on the wall, computers, telephones, racks of clothing, thick binders, and other pieces of equipment. On one side of the room, a long curtain had been drawn around a space about 6 by 10 feet. The lights suddenly came on, and Mars and Decker looked around to see Lancaster standing by a light switch.
"I don't like the dark,"
she said, turning off her flashlight. Mars and Decker put away their flashlights and gazed around.
"Holy shit, what is this place?" asked Mars.
Decker strode over to a desk and looked down at the items lying there, next to a piece of machinery.
"They're making IDs here."
He picked one up to see a young man staring out from what was a Virginia driver's license. The name on the license was Frank Saunders, born in 1993, and with an address in McLean, Virginia.
"This guy I saw working at the restaurant as a waitstaff trainee, only his name, I was told, was Daniel, not Frank."
Mars held up a stack of credit cards in one hand and sets of American passports and birth certificates in the other.
"Okay, I'm no expert, but these damn things look genuine."
Lancaster had drawn back the curtain to reveal what looked like a rudimentary operating room and was now standing next to a gurney. She pointed to an array of surgical instruments lined up on a table. Next to that was a portable high-intensity light, and next to that were oxygen tanks and an IV stand with empty bags hanging from it. Lined up against the wall were a variety of medical monitoring instruments. Lancaster exclaimed,
"Okay, this is freaking me out. They're operating on people down here?"
She pointed to the large sink set against the wall.
"Maybe that's where they scrub up before doing whatever the hell they do."
Mars was looking at the racks of clothes.
"They got everything here, for both men and women." He picked up a wig, "including these."
Computers were set on each desk. Stacks of paper sat next to the computers. Decker picked up the top page of a stack.
"What is that?"
asked Lancaster, coming over to him.
"It's a list of 40 cities across the country. There's an X next to each city."
He pointed to the maps on the wall.
"These documents might correspond to the red and green pins on those maps. Looks like they have pretty much every major metro area covered."
He picked up another piece of paper.
"This reads like someone's bio. Birth information, background, work experience, marital status."
He looked down at the bottom of the page. He read off,
"Gardner and Associates."
Lancaster said,
"Brad Gardner."
"Well, he runs a job placement business."
"But that's not illegal," said Mars. He looked around the space. "Now this place definitely looks illegal."
"Whether it's illegal or not depends on who you're placing in those jobs," said Decker.
He looked over at the gurney and surgical instruments.
"That's obviously to change someone's appearance. The clothes, wigs, fake IDs, credit cards, passports, birth certificates, and fabricated backgrounds all work to complete a new identity. And then Brad Gardner places them in positions around the country. And he's not placing people as waiters or maids. He's placing them in finance, the high-tech field, lobbying, government, and other sectors. That's what Mitzi said."
"Yeah, but what sorts of people?"
asked Lancaster. He looked around the room.
"People created here."
"But they must have experience in those fields," said Mars. "I mean, you can't walk into Goldman Sachs or Google or GE or the U.S. government without knowing what you're doing."
"Oh, I'm sure they know what they're doing," said Decker. "And now we know this place wasn't really just laundering money."
"What do you mean?"
asked Lancaster.
"They were laundering people."
Chapter 71.
"What in the hell do you mean you lost him?"
said Lancaster. She was staring at a pair of plainclothes detectives who she'd assigned to watch Bill Payton's apartment. They were back at the police station after thoroughly going over the lower-level room at the American Grill.
"He was there, Detective Lancaster," said the larger of the pair, "and then he was gone."
His partner added,
"But you called and told us to bring him in. We knocked and knocked on the door. Then when there was no answer, we forced the door and searched the whole place, top to bottom. There was no sign of him."
"He lives in an apartment building," said Decker. "Did you think to search the building?"
"But we had the front and back entrances covered."
"He could have gone into another apartment when you came into the building and then left while you were searching his place," pointed out Decker. "If he was watching you, watching him."
"Well, I guess he could have," said one of the detectives.
"There's no guessing about it,"
barked Lancaster.
"He did."
After the men left them, Lancaster said,
"Idiots. We had him, Decker, we had him, and now, poof, he's gone. You knew he was going to be on the security call list. That was supposed to flush him out. And then these morons lose him."
"Vanishing people seems to be a recurring theme with this case," said Decker sardonically.
"So now what?"
"We have a lot of information to process."
"My team is collecting all the evidence from that underground room. It's a ton. But the computers all are password protected. And my tech guy says the hard drives are clean, which means everything is kept in some cloud somewhere that we can't access."
"But there's other evidence in there. The IDs, the documents, and the rest."
"You said they were laundering people?"
"The trainees at the grill. I think they came to Burlington to be processed. Given new identities. Maybe some had their features changed through plastic surgery. Then they were sent out into the world. probably at positions gotten for them by Brad Gardner.
But for what purpose?
I don't know.
And why Burlington, Ohio?
I think this has been going on for as long as the American Grill has been in business. That underground room would explain the need for the additional concrete and the way they tried to hide it during the construction process.
So David Katz was involved in this from the get-go?
I don't see how he couldn't be, and he paid off his loans early with fresh money.
And Bill Payton?
He's been there since the inception, too. He had to know about the room. That's why he disappeared. I think he's a smart enough guy to see what we were doing, using a fire to get in and search the place.
But a smart defense counsel could get all the fruits of our search thrown out as tainted. We didn't have a warrant, and the fire explanation may not hold up at trial.
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it, but I'm less worried about that than I am about stopping what's been going on here, Mary.
So why was David Katz killed, and the Richardses?
Bad guys kill other bad guys when they feel threatened. It could be that Katz wanted more money to do what he was doing. Or maybe he got cold feet and was thinking of going to the cops and telling them what was going on.
And the Richardses?
The banker told us that Don Richards was Katz's go-to person there. Maybe the people behind this were afraid that Katz had told Richards too much. We've already speculated that Carl Stevens learned through his drug deals with Richards' son about some communication between Katz and Richards. Stevens must have told someone, and then they struck on the idea of pinning all this on Merrill Hawkins.
Because Stevens knew Mitzi.
Right. Hell, Stevens might have been the one to suggest pinning it on Hawkins. He certainly knew about Mitzi's drug addiction, and probably also about her mother and her need for pain meds. But Merrill wasn't stupid. He must have figured out that his daughter set him up, but he didn't know why. Maybe he just thought she'd gotten in trouble. He said nothing because he didn't want to add to her grief and to his wife's.
But then he runs into Carl Stevens in prison, and Stevens maybe runs his mouth. He lets Hawkins know the truth, or close to it.
So he gets that tat of the arrow through his little star, symbolically killing his daughter, and comes back here trying to prove his innocence.
And somebody kills him,
said Lancaster.
But how would they have known what he was up to?
Stevens might have tipped off someone on the outside about Merrill getting out of prison. When he shows up back here, they decide they need to get rid of him before he could start making waves.
Fortunately, he reached us before they could kill him,
pointed out Lancaster.
It won't be fortunate if we can't figure out the truth, Decker retorted.
So Gardner and Payton are both on the run. You think they're going to hook up at some point?
Anything's possible. Gardner really outsmarted me, but the guy was scared, Mary, and he wasn't scared of his wife, even though she was shooting at both of us.
He was scared because of the people he's involved with.
Well, considering what they've done so far, who can blame him?
His phone buzzed. It was Jameson.
Hey, Alex, I'm a little busy, right?
She interrupted.
The team's coming to Burlington.
What? I thought you were in New Hampshire.
We were. But another case is suddenly taking precedence.
What case?
Yours.
Chapter 72. Ross Bogart looked every inch the FBI agent someone would expect to see on TV. Tall, physically fit, good-looking, with sharp features, alert eyes, and a quiet competency. But it was more than looking the part. The man was a gifted investigator and worked exceedingly long hours at his job. Todd Milligan was nearly a carbon copy of his boss, albeit a bit shorter and about a decade younger. He and Decker had been at cross purposes early on in their professional relationship, but had long since reached common ground. The fact that Decker had saved his life once hadn't hurt either. The FBI team had flown into the nearest regional airport and driven straight to Burlington, telling Decker that they preferred to meet at his place rather than the police station. Now they were standing in Decker's room at the Residence Inn. Melvin Mars was there as well, as was Mary Lancaster. The male FBI agents were dressed in matching dark suits, starched white shirts, and striped ties, and they sported impassive features. Alex Jameson had on a black pantsuit with a white shirt and low heels. Her expression was equally serious.
"Detective Lancaster, it's been a while. Good to see you," said Bogart.
She replied,
"Well, looks like we're hunting with Decker again, like old times."
Decker said,
"Why are you here, Ross? You didn't say."
Bogart leaned back against the wall and folded his arms over his chest.
"We cracked the wall around two of those shell companies that you sent to Alex."
"Meaning the backers for Rachel Katz?"
"Yes. Although the financial relationships apparently go back farther than that, to the time of David Katz's being in charge of the business."
"And what did you find?"
asked Lancaster.
"Both companies were set up by a businessman with known ties to a Russian oligarch. That's why we're here."
Lancaster gaped.
"A Russian oligarch is bankrolling a business in Burlington, Ohio. How does that make sense?"
Bogart said,
"It's a fact, so somehow it makes sense. We just have to figure out how."
Lancaster looked over at Decker.
"I didn't see that one coming."
"The room underneath the American Grill," said Decker. "We speculated that it was laundering people, giving them new identities, and then sending them off into the American workforce, in places of influence, through Brad Gardner's placement business."
"But what they're really doing is spying on us,"
said Jameson. Lancaster nodded.
"Exactly, and let's face it, legit businesses don't have ID mills hidden under restaurants. Their intent is clearly nefarious."
Decker had been typing in something on his phone. He looked up and said,
"We need to find Gardner and Peyton, and we need to dig into Gardner's business."
"We didn't know about Brad Gardner," said Bogart. "But now that we do, we'll get going on that. You said he's disappeared?"
"Along with Bill Peyton, the manager of the American Grill. Ironic, isn't it?"
"What?" said Bogart.
"That they called it the American Grill, since it was apparently financed by a Russian oligarch."
He thought of something else.
"The tats on the two dead guys, Tyson and Stevens."
"What about them?" said Bogart.
"Aryan Nation, Nazi, and KKK.
"Right.
But there was one more."
Bogart thought for a moment, but then shook his head.
"Which one?"
"KI.
"I thought that was something to do with the Klan,"
said Jameson.
"I did too, and there is actually a Klan symbol close to that."
He held up his phone.
"But I just did some digging after you told us about the Russian connection."
"And?" said Bogart.
"Back in the 40s, KI was sort of a foreign intelligence agency in Russia. KI apparently stands for Committee of Information."
"Damn,"
said Jameson, while Bogart looked intensely interested.
"How does an old and presumably now defunct spy agency figure into this?" he asked.
"I look forward to asking Bill Peyton, or whatever his real name is, for the answer," replied Decker.
"But David Katz built the grill 15 years ago,"
said Lancaster.
"Are you telling me that the Russians were involved in this stuff here all that time ago?"
Bogart said,
"People think the Russians just started messing with us. It was long before that. They've had spies all over this country ever since the Cold War started."
"But a spy operation in Burlington?"
said Lancaster.
"Softer target," said Bogart. "Not as many resources. And for a lot of these people, I imagine they don't end up working in Burlington. I imagine that Gardner places them all over the country. This is just the launch pad."
"The map we found in the underground room confirms that," noted Decker. "These tentacles go all over the country and to the largest metro areas."
"So Gardner's a traitor,"
exclaimed Lancaster.
"And so is Peyton."
"If they're even American," pointed out Bogart. "Now we just have to find them and prove it. I'm calling in more assets, but we want to do this on the QT. We have no idea who else might be involved in this. That's why I didn't want to come to the station initially."
Lancaster looked stunned.
"Wait a minute. Are you saying..."
"What he's saying, Mary, is that no one is above suspicion," said Decker. "And I agree with him."
Lancaster looked put out by this, but remained silent. Bogart gazed at Decker.
"You've been in the trenches here, and know the territory better. How do you want to do this?
Bolos on both Peyton and Gardner. Maintain round-the-clock protection on Katz and Mitzi Gardner. Right now, they're the only witnesses we have.
He paused.
We need to get a search warrant for Gardner's business. Hopefully, we'll be able to find out who he's placed and where.
Decker eyed Mars.
And I'm afraid that Rachel Katz would have had to know about all this at some point.
But she kept quiet and played along, said Mars.
Looks that way.
Maybe she had no choice, said Mars defensively.
People always have the choice to either be a traitor or do the right thing, said Milligan sternly.
And Mitzi Gardner?
Asked Lancaster.
Decker said, she was an addict who set up her father. She probably didn't know about the possible spy operation, and she didn't need to know.
But why have Gardner marry her?
Said Lancaster.
What better way to make sure she doesn't do anything stupid than by having one of the people involved right there every day? And Mitzi turned out to be a great mom and doting wife. For Brad Gardner, it was probably a win-win. He was playing a role, and I'm sure he was well compensated for it. There are worse ways to spend your life than being rich.
Jameson said,
I think I'd rather stay single.
Bogart said, we'll run those leads down and search Gardner's business. What else?
Bag and tag everything that was in the grill's underground room.
Bogart said, you were lucky that an apparent fire broke out, so you could search the place and find that room.
He stared pointedly at Decker.
I'll always take luck when I can get it, replied Decker, even if I have to make it myself.
Chapter 73.
Stripped clean, Bogart said over the phone to Decker. Gardner's office didn't have a thing left in it. He must have had an exit plan in place. As soon as you spooked him, he probably had the place wiped. Same thing for Peyton's apartment. Nothing left, if there was anything ever there.
Decker said,
we need to find out all we can about them, Ross. And his house and office have to be full of the guy's prints. Same for Peyton's apartment.
I already have a team looking for that. Now these trainees you told me about at the American Grill?
Yeah.
I doubt any of them will show up for work. Peyton would have given them a heads up, but I'll have people there just in case they do. And we'll track down where they were staying and search all those places, too.
Let me know if you turn up anything, said Decker.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to take a little trip down memory lane.
Decker sat across from Lancaster at her house. In the background, he could hear Earl and Sandy getting ready to go out. Sandy burst into the room. She was a fireball of energy, always in a good mood, until she dropped into the blackness of despair, something that could occur within seconds. Her coat was half on, and a ski cap covered her eyes. She pulled it up and announced herself.
I know you,
she said to Decker.
You're my mommy's partner. You're Amos Decker.
And you're Sandra Lancaster.
This was a little ritual that the pair had always engaged in. Earl hustled in and grabbed Sandy's hand.
We'll be back later, he said, glancing first at Decker and then at his wife.
Right, hon. Thanks,
said Lancaster. After the pair left, Decker refocused on his old partner.
Things going okay? He asked.
We're taking it day by day, hour by hour. I have to tell you that Earl teared up when I told him what you said to me on those bleachers that night. He's very grateful for your talking some sense into me.
It was just my opinion, Mary. I can't judge you, because I haven't walked in your shoes.
Well, I think you stopped me from making a big mistake. When things go bad, you need your family. You don't push them away.
No disagreement from me.
Okay. The case?
It's starting to make sense, but there are some gaps.
Some gaps?
We know that Merrill Hawkins was set up. His daughter helped to frame him for the four murders. We don't know the exact motivation for the killings, but the fact that Katz had some sort of spy ring going on underneath his restaurant gets us close to it. He either had a falling out or demanded more money, or whoever killed him was feeling threatened by him.
Okay.
Fast forward to today. Hawkins learns the truth from Carl Stevens. He gets out of prison and comes back here to enlist our aid to prove his innocence. Someone kills him that same night.
And we still have no idea who that is.
Since we've learned that the spy ring, or whatever it is, was still operating in Burlington, it seems to me that the spy ring's the likeliest culprits. Now we have Rachel Katz. She was the point person for a consortium of shell companies that Bogart has discovered have a Russian connection. Now Rachel was waffling some. Look at her discussion with Melvin. They might have been afraid that she was going to turn on them, so they tried to kill her. They tried to kill me, too, and they did kill Sally Brimmer.
Because she impersonated Susan Richards, but we still don't know how someone got her to do that.
No, we don't. That's still an open question, but they might have blackmailed her by threatening to tell Natty's wife about their affair. Now Mitzi Gardner, overcome with guilt, tries to kill herself with pills. I think she was lucky she had a gun.
Why?
Otherwise, her hubby might have saved her the trouble.
You think he would have killed her?
I can't really assume otherwise. We found the underground room and all the evidence there pointing to some sort of spy ring. Peyton has made a run for it, as has Brad Gardner. Now we've got two women in hospital beds, and we're waiting for them to wake up to tell us what they know.
If they wake up, and if they do, we have no guarantee they'll tell us anything.
We have leverage over them. Mitzi tried to kill me, and there's no way that Rachel can plausibly argue that she had no knowledge of that room under the American Grill. If they talk, they can work a deal. If they won't, they go to prison for a long time. But I don't want to count on them. We have to keep pushing.
The FBI may find out some stuff that could help us.
Maybe. But they also might end up with a big fat zero. These people obviously had an exit plan in place, and they executed it pretty damn well.
So we may be back at square one then, after all this time.
Maybe not, he said.
What do you mean?
It's occurred to me that this whole thing runs deeper than I previously thought. It seems to me that someone connected to this is hiding in plain sight.
Okay. How do we find out who that is?
We let them do it for us, Decker said cryptically. Chapter 74. They had brought Mitzi Gardner from the hospital in Trammell to the one in Burlington. Both women were in the same room so that their protection could be consolidated. Policemen and state troopers were arrayed around the hospital and outside their room. Across the street, counter-snipers were posted to prevent anyone from taking a long-range shot at the women. Decker, Lancaster, and Mars were waiting outside the room, because they had been told that Rachel Katz seemed to be coming around. A few moments later, Natty showed up with Pete Childress and Captain Miller. Childress looked chastened and anxious, Miller grim and focused. Childress glanced at Lancaster, but would not look at Decker.
Natty told me all the work you've done on this, Mary. Good job. In Burlington, I can hardly believe this crap is going on.
Lancaster said firmly,
Decker's done most of it, Superintendent. Without him, we'd be in the dark about everything.
Childress seemed to wince a bit at her words. He finally looked at Decker and nodded curtly.
Right, yes, well, that's good, Decker. I'm glad to see that you've been of assistance to the department.
Maybe you can put a good word in for me with my obstruction case, replied Decker. This time Childress perceptibly flinched.
Yes, well, he cleared his throat heavily. I think that won't be a problem.
Miller added, I'm sure it won't be. We're dismissing the charges, Amos.
Good to know.
Okay, said Childress. Is she ready to talk yet?
Let's go see, said Decker.
They all trooped into the room. The beds were right next to each other, with Katz on the left and Gardner on the right. Gardner had not regained consciousness. She looked like she was resting peacefully. Decker glanced at Katz. She was moaning slightly and seemed to be moving around a bit, as though she were in pain.
Well, said Childress sharply.
He was pacing nervously around the room.
Is she going to talk, or did I get called down here for no reason?
The doctor's heading in momentarily,
said Lancaster. Childress kept pacing and shaking his head. He looked up at Decker.
I know the FBI's in town. Have they made any progress on this?
Not that I know of, said Decker. The spy ring got flushed out, but had exit plans in place, it seems.
I understand that Brad Gardner managed to slip away from you, said Childress, a note of gleeful triumph in his tone.
He managed to slip away from a lot of people,
said Lancaster defensively. Childress glared at her. I don't think Decker, of all people, needs anyone to stand up for him, Mary.
I made a mistake, conceded Decker. But in my defense, Mitzi Gardner was shooting at me at the time.
This statement seemed to take all the fire out of Childress. Yeah, I guess I would have probably lost him too under those circumstances. He looked at Lancaster. Where's the doctor? A moment later, a female physician dressed in blue scrubs walked in and greeted them. Decker said, How is she?
Miss Katz is stable, and we're weaning her off the pain medication slowly. There was a great amount of internal damage done, more than we thought initially. She had a very close call.
She glanced at the monitor next to Katz's bed.
I can't guarantee anything as far as her being communicative, but let me just make clear that her physical well-being is my chief concern, and if I see any adverse reaction in my patient, I will cut this off instantly. Understood?
Childress didn't seem pleased by this, but nodded and said gruffly,
Understood. Can we push forward then? Because this is important.
The doctor went over to the machine hooked to the IV and manipulated some of the controls. A minute went by and nothing happened. Then Katz began to stir. Everyone drew closer when her eyes fluttered open, though they nearly instantly closed. While the doctor was watching her closely, Katz opened her eyes once more and slowly looked around. When her gaze alighted on Mars, she smiled tenderly.
You saved.
Her voice trailed off and her eyes drooped. Mars gripped her hand and smiled back.
You're getting better every day, Rachel. Doc says you're doing good, real good.
Decker stepped forward to stand next to Mars.
Rachel, do you feel up to answering some questions?
She looked up at him, her brow furrowed.
Questions?
Yes. Do you know what happened to you?
Katz reached up and touched her shoulder.
Shot.
Yes, someone tried to kill you.
Who?
We don't believe he has any personal connection to you. We think he was hired to try to kill you.
I don't understand.
Mars gripped her hand again. You were telling me about shades of truth, Rachel, remember? She nodded slowly. Well, in this case, I think Shades of Truth will set you free.
Decker said, We found the room under the American Grill.
He wanted to see her reaction to this, muddled as it might be because of the meds she was on. She swallowed with difficulty, and her eyes fluttered. Natty came to stand next to Decker, with Childress next to him.
Natty said, Ms. Katz, we know about Bill Payton and Brad Gardner.
His wife is lying in the bed next to you. She almost died of a drug overdose. Katz looked up at them one by one, and her lips started to tremble.
Mitzi.
Yes, said Childress. Lots of people are dying around here, and frankly, we need answers, or others could die too.
Tears started to stream down Katz's face, and she started to shake. An alarm on her monitor sounded. The doctor immediately cranked her meds back up, and Katz slowly slid back into unconsciousness as the alarm subsided.
That's all for now.
But we didn't get anything, protested Childress.
Natty put a hand on his boss's arm.
We'll come back. We'll get what we need, but she needs to rest now. Let her be.
Childress looked strangely at Natty, glanced at Decker with a hike of his eyebrows, and shrugged.
Fine, but we can't let this drag on. It won't, said Natty.
Decker looked at Natty for a long moment before glancing at Mars, who was still gripping Katz's hand and staring down at her. He used his finger to wipe the fresh tears away from her cheeks.
It'll be okay, Melvin, he said quietly.
You don't know that.
No, I don't, but we can hope it will.
Call me when she can talk again, said Childress brusquely.
He turned and left. Natty looked after him.
He's really afraid this is going to reflect badly on him. A spy ring operating right under his nose.
I could see how that might give him some sleepless nights, remarked Decker.
Lancaster approached him.
So what now?
He looked between Gardner and Katz, then his gaze went to the window, and he suddenly turned thoughtful. He looked down at his feet, then back up.
The answer's out there, he said. We just have to keep looking.
Lancaster said,
Where? We've got everything covered that we can. But you and I know that Peyton and Gardner and their team of spies could be out of the country by now, especially if they had access to a private jet.
Doesn't matter. I think we can still find the answers we need.
How? Asked Natty.
Decker glanced at him. You just never know when a helpful witness might pop up. What witness? Said Natty.
Decker headed to the door.
Let's see if I can show you. But first, we have to take care of something. And take care of it right now.
Chapter 75. The uniformed man walked up the steps to the top floor of a building across the street from Burlington's main hospital. He carried a sniper rifle and took up a post at a window looking out onto the street. He glanced to his right and then his left. He blended in with the counter-snipers in the area. He manipulated his scope and drew his sight line. He made sure to keep to the shadows as he pointed his weapon at the window opposite his position. In his mind, he envisioned the space behind the closed blinds and worked some numbers into his shot calculations. He recalibrated his scope and then took aim once more. His trajectory calculations complete, his finger slid to the trigger. He would fire three shots in rapid succession. He settled down his respiration and with it his heart rate. In truth, the distance was not a problem. However, he was, in some ways, firing blind. Yet he should still be able to hit his target. His eye and grip as steady as humanly possible, he squeezed the trigger slowly three times, moving his barrel in a precise pattern as he did so. Then he dropped his rifle and sprinted to the back of the building. From there, he quickly made his way down the stairs and out the exit. He rushed down the street to where a car was waiting for him. He jerked open the door and climbed in. Hit it, he said. When the car didn't move, he looked over. Four guns were pointed at his head. Special Agent Alex Jameson, who held one of those guns, said,
You're under arrest.
Decker looked at the shards of glass strewn around the hospital room, the empty hospital room, although earlier that day it had housed both Rachel Katz and Mitzi Gardner. They had been moved to another room well away from here at Decker's request. He brushed the floor with his foot where the three shots had hit. They lined up with Katz's bed. The woman, had she still been in the room, would have been dead. But there had been no shots aimed at Gardner. Lancaster stood in the doorway watching Decker. When he glanced over at her, she shook her head, her lips in a straight line. It was as disapproving a look as Decker had ever seen on his old partner.
Old sins cast long shadows, murmured Decker.
Lancaster nodded as Special Agent Bogart appeared beside her.
It's still a bitter pill to swallow, she said.
I feel the same, replied Decker.
He glanced at Bogart and then returned his gaze to Lancaster.
You ready?
I'm ready.
They climbed into Bogart's rental and drove over to the police station. They took the elevator to the homicide detective's office. Lancaster opened the door and poked her head in. Natty was the only one in there, reading over a file at his desk. Lancaster said,
Blake, you got a minute?
He glanced over at her. Sure, what's up?
You'll see, but you need to come with us now.
Natty looked puzzled and apprehensive. He slipped on his jacket, which had been hanging on the back of his chair, and walked out into the hall where he saw Decker and Bogart. What's going on? He said, looking at Lancaster.
Like I said, you'll see,
she replied.
One thing, Natty, said Decker.
What?
I need your gun.
What? Said Natty, drawing back and looking stunned. Decker put out his hand.
Your gun?
I'm not.
Yes, you are, said Bogart.
He had drawn his weapon and was pointing it at Natty.
What the hell is going on? Barked Natty. You're breaking the law, pointing your weapon at me.
The price of admission to the party is your gun, Natty, said Decker. No exceptions.
Natty slowly pulled his Glock from his shoulder holster and handed it, butt first, over to Decker, who made sure the safety was engaged, and then pocketed it.
I don't know what the hell you guys are accusing me of, began Natty.
Shut up, Blake,
snapped Lancaster.
And follow us.
Along the way, they picked up Captain Miller, who was also looking as stern as Decker had ever seen him.
Captain? Began a worried-looking Natty. But Miller held up his hand.
Not now, Natty.
They walked up one more flight of stairs and headed down the hallway to the end. Decker didn't knock. He just walked in. Peter Childress looked up from his massive desk. Behind him on the wall were an array of photos of him with local politicians and at public events, together with a shelf full of citations and awards bestowed upon him over the years. His brow furrowed as the group walked into his office.
What are you all doing here? Is there a development?
Yes, there is, said Decker. Would you please stand up?
Excuse me? Said Childress.
You know the drill, Pete, said Miller. You have to stand up.
What the hell for?
Lancaster came forward and took out a pair of handcuffs.
Peter Childress, stand up. Now.
Where the fuck do you get off?
Lancaster grabbed him by the suspenders and yanked him out of his chair.
I'll have your badge, Lancaster, he roared.
I think you got that backwards, said Decker.
Lancaster roughly cuffed Childress's hands behind his back.
Peter Childress, you're under arrest for conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy to commit espionage, conspiracy to commit money laundering, and about 100 other charges, but those will do.
Childress froze. Natty stood there staring at his boss, his jaw hanging open. Childress roared,
You are all going to prison over this shit!
Decker stood a step forward.
We've got the guy who tried to kill Rachel Katz.
Tried, said Childress before catching himself. But what are you talking about?
I had them transferred into another room right after we met there this morning, said Decker. They're safe.
Transferred? Nobody asked for my approval on that.
Well, there was obviously a good reason for that.
Look, I don't know what you're getting.
He stopped when Decker started pacing around the room. Decker counted his steps as he went.
We're about the same height, you and me, Pete. Same length of stride. 6 paces over from the wall to the end of Katz's bed. Then 2 paces more to reach her chest.
Decker glanced at Natty, who was watching him, spellbound.
You remember him pacing like that this morning, Natty?
The detective slowly nodded.
He was measuring the distance from the wall to the bed so he could feed it to the shooter. Otherwise, he'd have been shooting truly blind into that room.
Bullshit! Prove it!
Roared Childress. In answer, Decker looked at Bogart. The FBI agent took out his phone.
We got a warrant to tap your phone.
He held up his phone.
You sent this text out 30 minutes after you left the hospital. It gives out the measurements to target the woman. And your guy was good, said Decker. All 3 shots hit where they were supposed to.
I don't know what guy you're talking about,
Bogart said.
Well, that's funny, because the guy we just arrested for the attempted murders had your text on his phone. He's already talked to us, Childress, and he's already fingered you. Your ass is cooked.
I,
stammered Childress.
But why not target Gardner? Asked Decker. Why just Katz?
Childress shook his head and said nothing.
Okay, did you tell Eric Tyson where Sally would be, Childress? Asked Decker. When you arranged for her to be shot? Or did you just have her followed?
The blood drained from Childress's face. He stole a glance at a stunned Natty.
Look, Natty, began Childress. It's not like that. You fucking prick, screamed Natty.
His hand went to his holster, but his gun wasn't there. He launched himself at Childress and managed to land a shot to the man's gut, doubling him over, before Decker, who had been slow to respond to the man's attack for some reason, grabbed him and pulled him away.
Why? Screamed Natty. What the hell did Sally ever do to you?
He used her, Natty, said Decker. Like I suggested to you before. He forced her to impersonate Susan Richards,
probably by threatening to tell your wife about your relationship. Then he got scared when he found out Sally was helping me. When she came out of the park with me, he had her shot.
Childress slowly straightened up, still gasping for air. Miller stepped forward.
Not in all my 40 years behind a badge have I seen anything like this. You're a disgrace, Childress.
But you can make amends, said Decker, by helping us.
Childress slowly shook his head.
This is a lot bigger than you think, Decker.
All the more reason to stop it.
Childress said to Lancaster,
I want protection inside. I mean it.
What are you scared of, Childress?
Asked Lancaster.
You all should be scared, said Childress. Every last one of you.
Chapter 76. As Childress was led away, Bogart said,
He might be right about that.
Why?
Asked Lancaster.
We got back a report on those fingerprints you took of Bill Payton.
We couldn't find anything on him in the databases we had access to,
said Lancaster.
Well, we have access to a few more, including some international ones, actually, and not the typical ones, but it was still very difficult for us, and that's what took so long. We actually had to turn to our friends at Mossad to score this information.
The Israelis? Said Decker. So I take it his name isn't Bill Payton.
Not even close. His real name is Yuri Igorshin, and the general physical description given by the Israelis matches what you told us about Payton.
Let me guess. Russian, said Decker dryly.
He was actually born in East Germany when the wall was still up, but came to the United States for college under a special program in place at the time. He went to Ohio State, same as you, Decker.
How does that make sense?
Asked Lancaster.
That a guy from that part of the world can just come here like that and go to school.
Well, he didn't come in announcing himself as a spy, and maybe then he wasn't technically one. He was a student with all the proper credentials and visas, and it showed him coming in from West Germany, not East Germany. Don't know how they managed that, but they did. He graduated and returned home. Sometime after that is when we believe he became associated with the KGB. Or at least Mossad believes that.
No, he was probably recruited by them before he came here for school, just so he could spy on us,
said Jameson.
That may be. Anyway, after the wall came down, he officially became part of the FSB, the KGB's successor. He apparently worked very closely with a lot of the upper echelon players there. Then he vanished. So for the last 20-odd years, no one knew where he was.
Decker said,
Well, he ended up in Burlington running a restaurant, and has for the last 15 years. That would tie in with a Russian oligarch bankrolling Rachel Katz.
Lancaster said,
He didn't sound Russian when we met with him. He seemed pretty American to me, whatever that means.
She added,
That's the point, said Decker. They don't all sound like villains from James Bond films. They're supposed to blend in and seem just like everyone else, and his time in the U.S. allowed him to do that. It made him very valuable.
Bogart said,
It's more than that, actually. We dug deeper and found out that Igorshin's mother, interestingly enough, was American. She was a defector after World War II. She sought asylum in Moscow and married a Russian, Anatoly Igorshin. He was an officer in the Russian army during World War II. And worked for the Soviet regime in East Germany.
Like father, like son. And his mother could have taught him American ways and speech then, said Decker. And that probably helped him adapt when he came here for college, and also when he returned to Burlington to operate the spy ring.
I'm sure all of that made him even more valuable to the Soviets, and then the Russians, added Bogart.
Have we made any progress on all the people they've placed over the years?
Asked Lancaster.
It's complicated. There were no records of those people at the grill, just the ones they were still processing, and they've all vanished, as have the kitchen staff. We'll interview the other waitstaff who weren't part of the operation. They may be able to tell us something that will help us track them down. And we do have an opportunity, though, in that Gardner placed a lot of these people. We're going to reach out to as many places as we can to determine if they hired any of his recruits.
If they're still there, said Decker, they may have all made a run for it.
That could be. If so, at least we're rid of them, which is something. But we'll reverse engineer this thing as best we can. Even if we can't locate these folks, we can at least assess the damage they might have done at their jobs and try to turn that around.
It's a long shot, but it's all we have right now, conceded Decker.
Natty said to Decker, Now I know why you took my gun. I would have shot the son of a bitch.
I know.
Decker took out Natty's pistol and handed it back to him.
Why would Childress have done this? Asked Natty.
Why else? Money. I think when we dig into his finances, we'll find some secret accounts flush with cash.
Do you think Childress has been working with them all this time?
Asked Lancaster.
Think back 13 years ago, Mary.
Okay, the 4 murders.
We were newly minted homicide detectives.
Right.
So brand new detectives were sent out on a 4-person murder scene with no seasoned detective to head up the investigation.
She glanced at Natty.
That's right. There were more senior detectives available to investigate the case, including you, Blake.
Decker said, I looked back through the records from that night. You want to guess who assigned us to that case?
Miller said disgustedly, Childress, when he was heading up the detective division.
That's right. He wanted inexperienced people on that case who would jump all over the forensic evidence that had been planted and never look anywhere else.
Decker glanced at Natty.
You might have seen what we didn't see back then, Natty.
Maybe not, but I wouldn't have figured it out all these years later.